thanks to all of you who stuck around all the way until the end of the afternoon. This is the work that I'm going to be talking about today is joint work with Ravi Kumar, Jasmine Novak, Prabhakar Raghavan, and Andrew Tompkins, who are now all at Yahoo, and at the time of this, almost all of them were at IBM, so draw your own conclusions. Okay. So Paul Ardoch is usually the example that I like to start with, but I'm sort of overwhelmed by the locale, and I think I have to say something about Kevin Bacon instead. So I'm talking about Kevin Bacon. I suspect a lot of you know the story of Stanley Milgram's experiments on small world phenomena, but it's late. I'm going to try not to tax your brains too much, so let me start by reminding you or telling you about Milgram's experiments to begin with. So Stanley Milgram was a social psychologist, and in the 1960s he was at Harvard and thinking about trying to sort of understand the way in which social networks were structured. So trying to understand something about what's known as the small world phenomenon. So here's how his experiments worked. So as I said, he was at Harvard. He picked Omaha, Nebraska as about as far away from Boston as you can possibly go without falling off the end of the earth, which I am now a Midwesterner, apparently, so I'm allowed to say these things about the Midwest. So it's true that that's just about as far from Boston as you can go without falling off the end of the earth. So here's what he did. He picked about 100 random names out of the phone book in Omaha, sent each one of those people a letter, and the recipients of the letter and everyone who later would have a hold of the letter were given the same instructions, namely that the letter was eventually supposed to reach a stockbroker friend of Milgram's who lived in the suburbs of Boston. The instructions are, if you have the letter and you are not the stockbroker, find a friend of yours. A friend here was someone you're on a mutual first name basis with. Send the letter on to that person. Eventually, you're supposed to get it to the stockbroker. So that was the setup. And the results of this that were, on average, of the chains that actually reached the stockbroker, they took about 6 hops to get there, and that's from whence 6 degrees of separation. And of course, what I just said was, of the chains that actually got to the stockbroker, massive alarm bell should be going off, because in fact, most of them didn't, but never mind that for a second, and let's move on. Let me actually just say one other thing about this, especially for, I think, people who have thought about this kind of phenomenon a lot. This actually sounds totally intuitive at this point, but I think that the world is small and there are not very many hops separating people in social networks and that sort of thing. But in fact, at the time, this was actually a big surprise. So if I were Stanley Milgram talking to you, I would not look like this, and it would be many years ago. But if I were telling you this and I asked you a sort of a poll question, how many hops do you think it'll take, your collective answer, so mathematically sophisticated audiences and whatnot, the answer would be something like 100. And so the point is, this is, even though it's not so surprising to you now, maybe, there was a time at which this was a very surprising thing. So there's something to explore. Okay. So this is a small world problem. Why is it the case that someone in Omaha should be so close, so few hops away from someone who sells stocks in a suburb of Boston? And let me begin with the straw man argument about random graphs. You take n random people, you wire people up, any pair of people up with some probability. The standard result of random graph theory that what you end up with is a network that has multi-input. Okay. So that's great. That's an explanation for the small world problem, except it's totally bogus. That's the only problem. Random graphs of the form that I just described are really not very good models of social networks. There are all sorts of things, and many of the things that we've talked about over the last couple of days, there are all sorts of things that you miss with that kind of random graph model. So, for example, degree distributions, clustering coefficients, two of my friends are much more likely to be friends of each other than two random people in the network, that sort of thing. So, rather than sort of harp on about more things that are wrong with that model, I want to get you to just take a look at a couple of social networks, a couple of social network pictures. This is from the work of James Moody. He's a sociologist formerly at Ohio State, the Great Midwest. Then they lost a whole bunch of college championship sporting events, and now I think he's at Duke. So this is an image of a social network derived from surveys of high school students. You ask people who their friends are, you get this list, you draw a network from that. And what you see here, I mean, there are a couple of things that I think are worth pointing out about this. The first is this doesn't look very much like what you would expect from randomly connecting people together. Right? This is yet another example of how the sort of Andrew graph is not such a good model of real social networks. The other thing is that to look at here is that you see this sort of phenomenon here that, you know, that line suggests something about racial composition of friendships, right? And I should point out that the way that this is laid out has nothing to do with the racial characteristics of the people involved. This is just sort of this spring analogy. You think of two people who are connected, who are friends of each other as kind of being pulled together, or two people who aren't as being pushed apart. You let them all go, it wiggles around for a little while, and this is the picture that comes out. So it's not because of the races of the people that the image looks the way that it does. Well, it is not directly because of the races, I should say. And you can sort of see that division in this, along that kind of northwest to southeast kind of divider. There's also something that you can see from the top to the bottom. There's another version of the same data set, and this is now with each of the people colored by their grade level. So this was 7th through 12th grade students. You can see, I hypothesize that there's that there are two buildings involved, so there's like a junior high and a high school. You can see the line kind of separating them there. As you go from the top to the bottom, the students get older and older. So this is sort of a well-known fact about social structures in general, that in general, your friends are kind of like you, right? So racially, socioeconomically, geographically, in various ways of looking at properties of people, your friends are like you. Okay? And in fact, if you think about it, that's kind of one explanation for where this high clustering might be coming from. And insert the word kind of or sort of between every pair of words that I say in the following sentence. But okay, so two of my friends are like me. So if I have two friends, right, they're like me, and by transitivity of like, my two friends who are both like me are like each other, and two people who are like each other are, again, by this property that your friends are like you, kind of more likely to be friends with each other as well. Okay. So all sorts of caveats in what I just said. I mean, sort ofs and kind ofs deserve to be sprinkled liberally throughout that. But anyway, this is at least one explanation for where this high clustering might be coming from in real social networks. So there's another thing that this is an interesting consequence of this Milgram experiment, and this is a sort of a more computational perspective on it. This is an important paper of John Feinberg from now almost 10 years ago, and I'll talk about some of the details in a little bit. But the short version is that the Milgram experiment that I just described to you actually tells you something much more than that, for example, the network has small diameter. What it tells you is something like, if you take 300 million people, somehow in some distributed fashion, they are able to construct short paths through a network. Right? And that's something more powerful. Right? It's not just saying that there are short chains, it's saying that somehow, in this distributed algorithmic kind of sense, people are able to construct short paths. I don't know what the graph looks like. I kind of know who I know. And I can look at my mental Rolodex and somehow compute some reasonably good next step in a path that will actually get into a stockbroker near Boston. That's kind of amazing. And something that was missed, I think, for about, well, roughly the first 35 years of post-Milgram's experiments. And actually, the two things that I've been talking about so far, this kind of distributed algorithmic sense and this observation that your friends are kind of like you, actually these two things sort of have an important interplay. Right? So what do I mean by that? Well, suppose that I'm aiming for a stockbroker. I'm trying to get a message to a stockbroker who lives near Boston. So what I would like to do is look through my mental Rolodex and pick out of all of my friends the one who is sort of in hop distance closest to the target. But I can't do that because I don't know what the whole graph looks like. So instead, what I kind of have to do is go through my mental Rolodex and pick people who are somehow more likely to be close to the target. Right? And because we have this property that people are kind of like their friends, there's this sense in which getting close in geography or socioeconomic status or occupation or something like that is kind of helping me to get closer and closer to the target in terms of hop distance as well. And so somehow these two things have to be, if these two things are pulled, are tied together, then I have some hope of actually rallying to a target.
What if your very close broker friend happens to sit in Los Angeles?
So it is true that I might not find the best path by using something like this, but somehow I don't have much hope of finding the short path that doesn't look like this, at least for me.
So you say you might go through Los Angeles?
If when I think about all my friends, the one who seems like the best bet is the one in Los Angeles, then yes. I mean, there's an interesting question of what similarity precisely means here, and I'll talk about that some more at the end. But the short answer is, it means lots of different things. So.
Yeah? And also the question of how suboptimal what you come up with is. Any information on it?
To some extent, there is. And you're doing just about as well as you could do using this kind of information. And I can't state the theorem precisely. There are some logs that I'm going to miss, so I won't try. But you're essentially doing as well as you could. Other questions?
So 6 is an additive log or a multiplicative log away from the optimum?
6 is surely not the right answer as the population gets very big, if that's what you mean. So. All right. So let me spend a little bit more time on sort of the sociological side, and that is, right. So what I've said up until now is, if I'm aiming for a target, so I'm trying to route somehow towards someone in a social network, that it seems like a good idea to use somehow some of these measures of similarity as a way to get towards the target. So I should pick my friend who looks most like the target in some way. And there are a couple of studies that have been done that have kind of looked at how people involved in these kinds of experiments actually chose next steps in chains reaching for a target. One of them was the so-called reverse small world experiment that was actually done sort of a follow-up study on Milgram's original experiments, so asking the people who actually participated how they chose the next step. And there was also a recent email-based, essentially replication of this Milgram experiment, so the Dutz, Hammond, and Watts paper from 2003, was essentially looking at the same kind of experiment as the Milgram one, done over email, where all of the subjects were asked to specifically say how they had chosen the next step in the target. In fact, there were lots of different targets, so you could look at questions like, was a theoretical applied mechanics professor at Cornell easier to reach than a drummer in New Zealand?
Yes.
And in these kinds of studies, what people found was that sort of there were two predominant ways in which people chose next steps in the chain. One of them is geographic proximity. So if I'm aiming for someone in Boston, I try to pick my friend who's closest to Boston. And another is something like similarity of occupation. I'm aiming for a stockbroker, so I try to find the person in my head who's kind of works in the financial industry and something as close to stockbrokering as possible. And the results of these studies were that sort of early on in chains, when you're kind of far from the target in many different ways, if you're a random person from the phone book in Omaha, geography seemed to predominate early. And as you kind of narrowed in geographically, then occupation started. And if you think about all of the stuff that I've been saying so far, it sort of suggests that something like a greedy algorithm is a good idea, right? I'm trying to get to some target in a social network, and I have these various ways of measuring proximity. What should I do? I should pick my friend who looks most like the target in some dimension. I just defined greedy, but I didn't define similarity. How do your friends pick the one who's most similar to the target and send on to that person? And I'll say what I mean by similar in a second. All right. So if I'm thinking about geography, then it's actually quite clear what I mean by similarity, right? There's people live on the surface of the Earth. There are there's some point where my friend lives, there's some point where the target lives, and I can compute the distance between them. So in that case, it's relatively easy. Occupation is a little bit trickier, but you can kind of at least imagine what this might look like. Somehow I have in my head this hierarchy of occupations, and somehow I can use that hierarchy to figure out where the, which one of my friends is closest to the target. I mean, you can think, I think there is a right answer in terms of geographic proximity and less of a single right answer in occupational proximity, but you can sort of at least imagine what it might look like. Yeah? Yes, I agree. You're right. That, for example, is sort of mileage separation the right measure? Or, for example, is it commute time? I mean, not in the random walk sense, but. Yeah?
So you said in the Milgram experiment, most of the letters got lost, didn't reach the stockbroker. So
yeah.
Doesn't this show that it's not a good algorithm?
Well, okay, so there are a couple of things that are going on there. One of them is. One of them is that people who throw away the letter, that's not exactly a strike against the algorithm, right? I mean, it's somehow people aren't participating. There's some really interesting objections that have been raised to the sort of conclusions that people typically draw from the Milgram experiment. There's a paper by Judith Kleinfeld from a few years ago. But clearly some people are not following, people just give up in some cases, and that's not exactly an algorithmic complaint. I guess what I would say is, really, the world is a small world. I mean, if you think about this kind of structure enough, you become pretty convinced that there are short paths. And the fact that most of the, that's only 100 trials. So I think that people are not as good at this as you might like them to be, but I don't think that's a strike against the algorithm particularly. Other questions? Let me just add another sort of footnote on this point, and that is that sort of what this greedy algorithm implicitly relies on, if we're trying to get to a target, is that people who are more like the target have a better chance of being friends with the target, right? I need to get closer and closer in some sense. It needs to be something more than, this is something more than your friends are exactly like you. So let me give you an example of a network that satisfies everything that I've said so far, in which the greedy algorithm is going to be a disaster. Right? All mathematicians know all other mathematicians. All physicists know all other physicists. And the source is a mathematician, and the target is a physicist. Right? So far, that's not so good for routing from a source to a target. It's kind of a network. Because, sure, your friends are a lot like you, but there's no way of bridging from one community to another community. So somehow, we would like it to be the case that there's some kind of smooth transition from people who are very like you to people who are not so very much like you, and somehow you can use that as a cue in getting in transmitting. So what I want to talk about is some partially theoretical and partially experimental work on this kind of question. And in order to do the partially experimental work, I have to tell you something about some data. So I'm going to start with this live journal community. This is Frank, who is apparently the mascot of live journal. Don't ask me. Live journal is this online blogging community. So at the moment, about 13 million users. And everything that I'm going to be talking about today is based on a crawl that was done of the community from a few years ago, early in 2004, just over 1.25 million. So here's what you get in LiveJournal. To start with, this work was kind of the first time that I actually read a lot of blogs. You find out more than you want about 1.3 million people, is the first thing. And then in addition to that, there are some features of the LiveJournal system that are really helpful for the kind of study that I want to describe. Each LiveJournal user has a profile that includes information about them, so some demographic information. Their birthday, their hometown, things that they're interested in, so bands or nail clippers, it turns out, those kinds of things. And in, ad- addition to that, we also get an explicit listing of their friends. So other users of the live journal system who they count as a friend. Whatever a friend means, but it's another question. It's another interesting question. So if you put all of this stuff together, what you get is a social network with geographic locations for each of the users. And we're going to throw out some of them who say that they're from Antarctica, and so also the people who say that they're from England, so we'll categorize those two as not interesting for the purposes of this, for different reasons. But the upshot is that we have about 500,000 people out of those 1.3 million who declare hometowns that are in the in the continental United States. So we get friendships connecting those 500,000 people to each other and their geographic locations. So that's the data set. And just to kind of give you a flavor of it, this is a picture of that data set. The red dots are locations for which at least one LiveJournal user has declared that place as their hometown. And then I'm showing you 1 out of 1,000 of the friendships in the network. So that's what the network looks like.
So Omaha is at the edge of the earth.
Yes. That's right. So
I guess you weren't putting in loops, self-loops, because there would be a lot of those.
You just can't see them. Yeah. They're drawn as straight lines of length zero.
Okay.
So I suppose I did, but I didn't. But you can't tell. I'm pretty sure my code wasn't that clever, is my point. But so let's look at this question of to what extent is it the case that your friends are like you? Okay. So what you're looking at here is a plot of on the x-axis separating distance. So this is geographic separation. On the y-axis is out of all pairs of people in the LiveJournal network who are separated by that distance, what fraction of those pairs actually declare a friendship? So that's what you're looking at here. And I should stop for a second and say, one observation about this is there's actually a fairly smooth decay here. And you should actually stop and be a little bit surprised that that it's decreasing at all, actually. Because what this says is, in this LiveJournal community, which is this completely online, virtual community of friendships, somehow the closer you are to somebody, the more likely you are to be friends with them. And that's not immediately obvious. Right? Somehow in this virtual community, it could well turn out that geography just doesn't matter at all. But in fact, as you really is the case, well, some stuff out here flattens out. But if you look over here, the difference between 10 kilometers of separation and 800 kilometers of separation is pretty significant. Yeah.
What about smaller distances?
I'll talk about that a little bit more later, but the upshot is two locations. So we only have hometowns, which means that we don't get very specific resolution on locations. So this is all bucketed into 10 kilometer chunks. Yeah?
Do you have any data available on whether some of the branches predate climb term or were formed after they joined?
I do not. I think that that's one reason, certainly that's one of the reasons that geography plays a role here, that these are sort of virtualized real-world friendships. I think there's some other things that might be going on too, but I'm sure that's a big part of this. Yeah?
What do you have to say about the kink around 700?
This thing?
Yeah,
I'll say a lot about it in the next 20 minutes or so. Other questions? There's another hand somewhere, I think.
It's gone away.
It's gone. Thank you. I also want to talk about another data set, since I've been talking about geography and occupation as these sort of two notions of proximity. I want to talk about another data set that I had nothing to do with. This is from the work of Adamish and Adar, who were at the time working at HP Labs, and as such had access to all sorts of interesting information about other people who worked at HP Labs. And that's what they did is the following. They looked at emails that were exchanged within HP Research over a period of 3 months. So they had header information, to, from, date information at least. And what they did was for any two people in that, to any two employees who had exchanged emails, and in this case it was at least 6 in each direction over 3 months, they declared a friendship between those two people. So that's the friendship connection in this network. And so to sort of stick with the live journal theme that I started with already, I have to tell you something about what I want to compare it to. In this case, they had the org chart of the research labs. So we have the corporate hierarchy position. So here's the sort of unsorted picture of this. The dark black lines are the organizational hierarchy, and the gray lines are pairs of people who were friends according to this email-based definition. Good? And here's the sort of analogous plot to the one that I just showed you. X-axis here is essentially the height of the least common ancestor in the organization. The y-axis is, again, the probability of linking. The inset is, you should think of the inset as a log-log plot, since I can argue with you about this if you'd like, that least common ancestor is in some sense an exponential measure, so we can fight later if you'd like. So here's the log-log plot in the inset. And there they are, right next to each other. Actually, one thing that I'd just like you to observe from a distance is the inset shape here and the shape here on this log-log plot actually have, at least visually, quite similar characteristics. Right? It tails off for a while, kind of linearly, and then flattens out as you go farther to the right. So the paper of John Kleinberg that I've talked about a little bit already says, and I'll say in a more formal sense exactly what I mean by this, that for it to be possible to navigate a social network in the context, kind of in the way that I've said so far, you kind of have a trade-off between two kinds of things. One thing is that, something I've already said, you kind of need your friends to be like you, in the sense that you need to be able to sort of zero in on a target, right? So somehow the similarity has to be a cue to getting you closer and closer to a target. But there's also a second sense, which is, you need your friends to kind of be different from you, because if I'm going to use geography and I live in Omaha and all my friends are Omahaians, then I'm not going to be able to find someone who lives near Boston because I just can't get out of town. Right? All of my friends are too similar. So there's a trade-off. You need some sort of similarity, but also some sort of difference. And I'll say exactly what that trade-off is. But I guess the first point is that from these pictures so far, we know that there is some decay. As you become less similar, you become less likely to be friends, but is that the right decay? So let me tell you more precisely what Kleinberg's model was, and I'll tell you a little bit about his results. So there are actually quite a number of different ways to think about his model. I'm going to do the simplest one just to make this easier to describe. So start out by putting n people on a k-dimensional grid, and we'll do k equals 2 here for ease of projection. And each person in this network gets connected to his or her neighbors in each of the cardinal directions, so up, down, left, right. So you have four local friends in this context. And then we're also going to give each person an additional friend, an additional long-range link, and that works as follows. So here's a particular person who's considering befriending someone else in a long-range sense. So the probability that this person will befriend a particular candidate out there is going to be inversely proportional to the distance between them, so the distance in this lattice, raised to some alpha power. So alpha is a parameter to the model. So maybe this person gets that candidate as a friend. So here's Kleinberg's theorem. Says if alpha and k are different, so remember alpha is this parameter to the probability distribution, so links are being generated with probability proportional to one over distance to the alpha, k is the dimensionality of the grid. So if alpha and k are different, then no local information algorithm can find short paths in this network. So what do I mean by local information algorithm? Roughly speaking, you know who you are, you know who your friends are, you know where you live, you know where your friends live, you know where the target lives, but you don't know the global structure of the network. So we have sort of a reasonable model of what your perspective on a social network actually looks like. So on the other hand, if alpha and k are the same, then people actually can find short paths to a target. And short here means growing like log squared in the population size. And in particular, the greedy algorithm works, suffices to know. So let me summarize what we've said so far. There's Frank again. If you look at the live journal network and you look just at geographic information, it's possible to sort of simulate something like the Milgram experiment on that network. And what we find is that essentially that network is navigable. So that is to say, if we start from a source and we go to we're aiming for a target, and you choose the next step in a chain by looking at the geographic locations of your friends, pick your friend who's closest geographically to the target, then we get there in a short number of steps. Yes. If alpha is 2.1, then there is a, so then you cannot find a short path, or there's a polynomial lower bound on the length of the path that you would find. In the case of n equals 500,000, the difference between n to the 0.1 and log squared n is hard to tell the difference, but as n grows, you can actually say. So the live journal network really is navigable just by using geographic information. So that's point one. Point two is Kleinberg's theorem just told us that if you're going to be able to navigate something greedily, that is to say using local information, then, well, okay, what's the geography of the live journal network look like? Well, the surface of the Earth is two-dimensional, yeah? So if I'm going to navigate in a two-dimensional grid using a greedy algorithm, and it's going to work, then Kleinberg's theorem just told us that the probability of friendship between two people should scale like 1 over the distance between those two people squared.
Why do you say that the surface of the Earth is two-dimensional when there's sufficiently different densities? You assume that...
One moment. Ask that question again in 2 minutes.
Okay.
If I haven't already said. So let me answer that as follows. I am not, so I earlier gave the Erdős Reini straw man. This is really true that we thought this is what the story was going to be, and I'm not lying. The first thing that we set out to do in this research project was just to verify this relationship, right? It's navigable, and in order to be navigable on a two-dimensional surface, it better be 1 over distance squared. So we went searching to make sure that that was really true. So here's this plot that I showed you already. Distance separating people on the x-axis, link probability between those two people on the y-axis. And here's what we get. So sadly, this does not look very much like 1 over the distance squared. I mean, it looks a lot more like 1 over the distance, except, I mean, there's still this business that doesn't look a whole lot like a line at all, but I'll still deal with that in a second. Yeah, question.
So if you had something like the Kleinberg model, but you had some extra edges that are of different distribution.
Uh-huh.
So is it still, can you still navigate?
Yes, you can. You
so
can.
So it's only, it's very pure in the sense that there's only one scale. Okay.
Yeah, that's right. You can navigate as long as there are enough links at the 1 over distance squared scale. If there are extra ones, it only helps you. So David has already solved our problem, but we're going to go 2 slides before we actually admit the solution. So this seems like bad news, right? This doesn't look very much like the navigable setting. And let me deal with this. Let me deal with this tailing off question for a little bit, too. So I'm not very good at thinking in log-log plots. So I have to draw for you what constant plus 1 over d looks like in a log-log plot. So it looks kind of like this swoosh.
Something about this.
This
is very non-integrable in 2 dimensions. This is very non-integrable. Am I missing something?
Probabilities cancel the one.
Yes. This is really non-integrable. So what is going on here?
Right, so this is out of the people who are 1,000 meters apart, 1,000 kilometers apart from each other, this is the fraction of those pairs that are friends. So I haven't told you. Sorry?
What? It's already cumulative.
It's not conditional. No, at exactly 1,000 kilometers.
Oh, no, that's a different statement.
Yes,
yeah.
I agree. So the what I haven't told you. So what I haven't told you is what fraction of pairs of people in the network are separated by 100 kilometers.
So, so you're only dealing with part of the distribution, because in Kleinberg's thing,
yeah.
I mean, what was interesting is that, and people have studied the one-dimensional version of this model,
yeah.
going back to Freeman Dyson, and that 1/d² that
uh-huh.
comes in is the last integrable power if it's not conditional.
Right.
And that is what's going on there. And that is the point at which the model kind of collapses onto itself when you have a statistical mechanical model with that kind of a pair potential. And where you are, 1/d, is way beyond where it collapses on itself. It's not integrable at all.
So I
totally agree that this is bizarre, and David's question earlier is, I think, going to answer that. So the point is that as you go, I mean, the number of people who are separated by 100 kilometers is not necessarily the same as the number of people who are separated by 1,000 kilometers. And so,
well, one should be it should go like the square if your model is two-dimensional.
Right.
That's unless the density is wrong. Which is what David's point was, and which is what I'm going to get to.
Right.
In a
okay. Because
yes.
otherwise, it can't. I agree. Probabilities are not going to solve.
I agree. I mean, the point of this plot is this is a disaster. The way we were thinking about it, and I totally agree
right.
that it's
but
a disaster
it's,
in many
it's
ways.
It's not only a disaster; it's impossible.
Fine. It's an impossible disaster.
Okay.
Yes. I have no objection to that.
Okay.
No, but just because of what you said, I could try to. Right, probably the dimension has to do with integrability. So if you just put, you can simulate any dimension by just putting the right density.
Give me 5 slides.
Okay.
So yes, I agree. Okay. Let me talk about this. Tailing off business first, and then I'll get back to this other question. So what this is saying is, roughly speaking, as you go farther and farther apart from someone. Up to some point, it kind of looks like the probability that your friends, that you know each other, is tailing off as that distance increases. And then after about, 800 kilometers of separation, something like that, it essentially has leveled off, right? So what I'm showing here, mostly to help me, because I can't think like this very easily, is constant plus 1/d. And that's kind of this shape. And that says something like, one way to think about this is, there's kind of a constant probability that we're going to be friends no matter where we live. And if we're close to each other, we have an extra shot of being friends because of our geographic proximity, significant quotes. Okay. So I'll get back to that again in a second. But now, with regards to the impossibility questions and David's solution, here is a plot, again, of all of the locations in the live journal network for which we have at least one person who's declared that location as their home. And I'm taking Ithaca, New York, as the center of the known universe. So, again, an assumption that you can argue with.
Why didn't
you say
that? John is there.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. So what you see here is for every, so these circles centered on Ithaca, for each circle that you go out, you get another 50,000 people within that area. Okay. So, as you have all already pointed out,
right.
this does not look like uniform population density,
right.
which is not surprising because I already showed you this picture and there was all this white space up here, and so somehow you shouldn't have been shocked by it. On the other hand, we were, so I don't feel so bad about lying to you in the first few slides of this. So
you've got a Jacobian.
So this does not look like uniform population. Sure.
Okay.
Right.
Otherwise,
okay. So let me say a little bit more about that by looking at exactly the same kind of plot that I've shown you already, except by looking at a couple of different sections of the United States. So what you see here, again, separating distances on the x-axis, link probability on the y-axis, I'm showing you the same functions as I've shown you up until now, except West Coast here and East Coast here. So two things to note. The first is, this still doesn't look like 1 over d squared. And the second thing is, these two things don't look very much like each other either. Okay? If distance is really the explanation as to what's going on, then these two things should actually line up, and they don't. So here's one version of what's going wrong with this, and I will do the Minnesota-centric version of it for now. If you take someone who lives in, I think it's called Lake of the North County, Minnesota, which has a population of something like 33, the county, and you take someone who lives 500 meters away from that person, these two people are next door neighbors, right? When person A is making pancakes and has run out of eggs, person A goes to person B to get spare eggs, yeah? If instead you imagine two people living 500 meters apart from each other in Manhattan, there are something like tens of thousands of people who live closer to person A than person B does. So A and B probably haven't even met each other, never mind being next door neighbors and borrowing staples from each other. Right? Okay. So what I'd like to do for the rest of this talk is sort of discuss how to generalize the Kleinberg model that I've talked about so far to account for variable population densities. And to do that, I have to say something about how to incorporate population density into that model. And the idea that I want to use is the idea of rank. Okay. So here's what I mean by rank. Let's take a particular person who is considering a candidate friend somewhere out there. And let's look at all of the people who are closer to the person than that candidate was. So let me call that the rank of the candidate with respect to
closer
geographically. That's right. That's right. Okay. And so now I'm going to consider what I'll call rank-based friendship. So instead of using distance as sort of the fundamental parameter, fundamental unit, I'm going to use rank instead. So here's what I mean by a rank-based friendship. A person will choose a friend, a candidate friend, instead of on the basis of the distance between them, instead we'll do it on the basis of the rank. Rank-based friendship, specifically what I mean is that the probability that I befriend a candidate is inversely proportional to that person's rank with respect to me. Okay. Mm-hmm. So just to emphasize this, the relationship between these two models, if you think about the navigable setting of the Kleinberg model, then that is to say when the dimensionality is equal to that parameter alpha that I was talking about, so probability that I befriend someone who's this distance d from me is something like 1 over d to the k. And in the rank-based friendship world, it's 1 over the rank. Yeah. So in k dimensions, uniform population distribution, these two things are the same, right? A ball of radius d in k dimensions has the grows just like the rank does. So already we have some theorems for free, right? In a uniform population setting, everything matches up between the Kleinberg model and this rank-based friendship model. But it's, of course, more interesting if I can tell you something about variable population densities. So let me just describe a version of this model that allows for population densities to vary from point to point. And again, there are lots of ways in which we can do it, but I'll do this simple one just to start with. Start out with a grid of locations now, so much like the way in which we started before, and add a population to that. So that means we have a grid of locations, and each point can have many, many people living at that point.
But everyone has at least one.
Everyone has at least one. That's right. That's right. Okay. And then I have to tell you about friendships. So again, this is a sort of oversimplification of what we need, but it's just to start with, it's an easier way to state it. Each person gets wired up to at least one, to one person in each of the four cardinal directions, and then gets one additional friend chosen according to this rank-based friendship model that I've described so far. So this is essentially the generalization of the Kleinberg grid to allow for variable population densities.
David, is each location fully connected?
It is not, but the theorem sort of depend on that structure. So each person has a connection in each of the four directions, but in general, we'll only aim for getting to the right location rather than getting to the person themselves. Yeah?
Now, since this is an artificial network, mm-hmm. why did you insist on making it a grid where the dimension has to be
I will get rid of that requirement in a minute. It's so that I can draw the picture for this slide. That's the only reason. Other question? Stretch it. So let me at least tell you what the theorem is. And I'm going to tell it to you in this grid-based model, again, for the ease of describing it. So here's what the theorem says. If you have a k-dimensional grid and you take any population density, the same kind that I just described, take an arbitrary source person and a randomly chosen target person out of the network, then the expected length, expectation is taken both over the construction of the network, so the rank-based friendship was a probabilistic thing on its own, and also over the choice of the target, then the expected length of the path by running the greedy algorithm from that source to that target is log cubed of the population size.
Can I ask something?
Yes.
Quantum is getting half the length log at log squared.
Correct.
Why do you use the log?
This is a big O, right? This is big O scripted. It's not a.
This is big O. So the answer is because we. So I think log squared is probably the right answer, and we haven't been able to do it. So we may be getting close, but maybe not. So good. And in fact, I'll give you a short version of where this is. Why this claim differs from the Feinberg claim. So that in the original proof, there's something that says give or take. So suppose I'm at a source and I'm trying to get to a target. Here's what a sort of step of progress towards the target looks like. I would like to get halfway, and I'm going to try to get halfway log times. So what I need to do to get from S to T is have a friend, if I'm S, somewhere within kind of the whole of the donut here, right? And the original proof says that you can do that with pretty good probability. If I allow variable population densities, it's no longer the case that it's guarantee that it's easy to get into the whole of the donut. So why not? If almost no one lives in the whole of the donut, and lots and lots and lots of people live everywhere else, then my chances of having the link into the whole are very small. Okay. So why do we have a theorem? The reason we have a theorem is because, actually I just said it, not very many people live in the whole of the donut. So if we choose a random target, then almost always that random target is not in the whole of the donut. We're able to show that essentially compensates, so that those people are hard to reach, but you don't try to reach them very often. So the bulk of the proof is devoted to showing that somehow the difficulty of reaching isolated people is canceled by the fact that there aren't very many.
So what's the distribution on the targets?
Uniform.
Okay.
Which means non-uniform on the locations, of course. Yeah. Since we've already talked about a few of those comparisons. So let me just say a little bit about what the difference between these are. So again, we've lost a log. We've lost a for all targets and instead have this expectation over targets. And what I want to look at for a second is whether we've actually accomplished anything with regards to the real network. So let me show you some data. So this is the same kind of plot as the one that I showed you before, except now on the x-axis I'm showing you rank, and on the y-axis again link probability. So that says, so this point is take people who are separated by, so take the person who is thousandth on my sorted list of candidate friends and see whether that person is actually my friend. Right? Okay. And out of all of the people, how many thousandth entries in their lists are actually friends, and that's the number. Okay. So here's the first point is, this looks, well, okay, you gotta ignore that part and that part for a second, but if you think this is a line, it looks like a line that's kind of like 1 over r to the 1.15, which is a lot better than what we had before. We were aiming for 1 over d squared, and we had something that looked a lot more like 1 over d. Now, I require a great deal of generosity from all of you to think of this as a line. So let me try to make it actually look a little bit like a line. The first thing is, I'm going to do the same thing that I did before, which was, this is a repeat of the slide that you just saw. Again, there's this part where it tails off and flattens as you get farther out to the right. Let me subtract again. So I'm going to subtract a constant from that probability in the same way that I did before. Okay. It still doesn't look so very much like a line. But actually, now I'm going to get back to the question earlier about the smaller distances. And that is, if you think about this network, most people, we don't actually have very, very precise information about the geographic locations of people. So a typical person is actually in a city of size 1300 in this particular network. So that means that we can't really resolve the difference between, for example, rank 100 and rank 1000. It's just, we don't have that specificity of location. So I'm just going to do some bucketing. And now, so look only at ranges of ranks that are of width 1300 instead. Okay. And this is what the plot looks like now. So there are a couple of things that I want to say about it. One of them is, this now looks like 1 over r to the 1.3, which is pretty close to 1 over r, though not perfect. And I did have to do quite a bit of averaging to get this to show up. And just to kind of verify that I've done something at least mildly reasonable, here's what those two coasts now look like. So again, they're not exactly the same, but they're at least, these lines are now 1 over r and 1 over r to the 1.05, so we're getting a lot closer. And I'm running low on time, so let me just spend the last couple of seconds. Oh, yes, question, sorry.
So these things that you're estimating, so you're estimating certain proportions of probabilities from the data, like, and they are of the order 10 to the minus 5, 10 to the minus 6, but
yep.
You have, your size of your data is like a million people, or?
We have 500,000 people.
Yeah, so how reliable are those estimates that you get?
I mean, this is from the real data set, so I.
Yes, but even with the real data set, so you have 500,000 people and you're estimating a probability of size 10 to the minus 6, so.
I mean, the best thing that I can say is the fact that this is smooth suggests something positive, but I don't have any statements that are anything stronger than that. No. All right. So let me just wrap up by sort of telling you a little bit about what I've just said, and then asking, I think, a using sociological / computational question. So. I've given you this data set about this data that's shown that essentially in the live journal network, people really are at least approximately connected according to this rank-based friendship kind of model. So as you go out in rank, the probability that two people who are separated by that rank are friends looks at least is reasonably well modeled by 1 over the rank. And the question that I'd like to kind of wrap up with is, why should that be true at all? Kind of strange, I think, that somehow through whatever means people are choosing to make their friends, that somehow putting this all together, we end up with a distribution that looks like that. And I'm going to give just a very vague hypothetical example as to where this might be coming from. Somehow interests that people have often have sort of geographic centers to them. So Republicanism or Cornell hockey or the Boston Red Sox. That there's sort of a natural geographic center to them. And I think it's a very interesting question as to whether somehow these kinds of interests maybe can show where the echoes of geography are showing up in this online community, and also if there's a way to understand how rank-based friendship, even approximately, might be holding in terms of these. So with that, let me stop.